This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:05. Welcome to the Friday edition of the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by Old Second Bank. I'm Jim Gutis.
And I'm Chris Kreidel. A high temperature of 20 today. Right now it's 14 with a wind chill index of 3 above.
Well, those job numbers seemed positive, but investors aren't so happy with them, apparently. Let's get the latest on the markets as we go live to Bloomberg and Elisa Peretti.
That's right, Jim and Chris. It's one of those strange things where good news ends up with bad news for Wall Street. The Dow down right now, 395 points, a loss of 1.5%. NASDAQ falling 72, S&P down 32. The Bloomberg WBBM Chicago Index sliding more than 1%. So the January jobs report was a case of Main Street versus Wall Street. Main Street certainly has reason to cheer as the better than forecast 200,000 new jobs were added to payrolls. The jobless rate held at just 4.1%. And people are earning more as wages increased by 2.9% over the past year. That was the best gain since the recession. But all of that gives Wall Street reason for fear. It gives the Fed cover to pick up the pace of interest rate hikes, and that's what they're anticipating, and that's why we're seeing a lot of selling. Couple that with disappointing quarterly results from Exxon and concerns about iPhone sales for Apple. Both of those blue chips are deep in the red, Apple sinking 3%. We do have one standout gainer, and it is rare, Amazon. Shares up 5%. I just checked it. Year-to-date, Amazon shares have advanced 25%. Back to you, Jim and Chris.
Thanks, Veronica. And we're talking in depth on the Noon Business Hour today about the big tech companies, especially Amazon, which seems to not be able to fail at all. It was down 4% yesterday and up 5% today. And we're also talking about salary growth, inflation fears, and the job growth of 200,000 in January.
And with all those economic numbers, we tend to sometimes forget that we've also seen a lot of earnings reports this week. And we'll take a look at those as well as the decline of Bitcoin. It's Entrepreneur Friday, and we'll talk with a Northwestern professor and a group there that is helping entrepreneurs across the country get off the ground in fascinating ways. And when's the right time to start taking Social Security? We'll talk about that. It's all coming up on the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
Cash, credit, debit, and totally free. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Quarterly results are in for Amazon, Apple, Google. We're going to be tracking the winners and losers in our next segment. But right now, government jobs report for January headlines today's data. We're joined by Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist at Bloomberg in New York. Welcome back to the Noon Business Hour, Carl.
Good afternoon.
Did the 200,000 job growth, was that a surprise?
That wasn't particularly surprising to me. My team was actually forecasting an above consensus number. And the reason for that was over the last couple of months, we'd seen some strong results out of the goods sector in particular, so factories and construction. And that's often the leading indicator of a broader employment pickup. And so I think that's what we're seeing right now in the economy. If we look at GDP growth, it's been gradually accelerating. And when growth gradually accelerates, quite often the employment trend follows suit, and that seems to be what we're seeing at the moment.
So 200,000 is a great number for job growth. The Dow Industrials today are down almost 400 points. Is there something that Wall Street doesn't like or makes it uncomfortable?
Well, remember what Mae West said, too much of a good thing. That's a little bit of what we're seeing now. So this employment pickup is at such a pace that it really ultimately won't be sustainable, and it will start to drive the unemployment rate even lower still, and that will generate some wage pressures. And as wage pressures pick up, the Fed might pursue a more proactive, more aggressive policy of reining in economic activity. So in the details of the report, we saw average hourly earnings surprisingly high, and this is fomenting concerns that we could see a new, more aggressive Fed in 2018. And after all, after this weekend, Janet Yellen is no longer at the Fed, and her successor, Jay Powell, who's known to be at least slightly more hawkish, will be at the helm.
So you have to think that these numbers are somewhat solid because, number one, you not only have growth, but then you also have the wage numbers going up so high. So I imagine that in the long run will give us confidence about the economy going forward, if in the short term we're concerned about interest rates.
Exactly. It gives us confidence about the economic outlook, but that same confidence will give the Fed confidence that inflation pressures are coming back, and therefore they should normalize the policy. Mind you, if we look where interest rates are right now, between 1.25 and 1.5, that's almost a crisis stance of interest rates. And so, the Fed still is extremely accommodative, and we'll see the need to be less so once they're more optimistic about the economic outlook. And stocks don't like that because stocks have become very accustomed to these very low levels of interest rates.
How soon do you think the Fed will make a move?
It looks like Jay Powell's first meeting, which will be in mid-March, is going to be the first opportunity for them to raise rates. And markets are expecting them to go about two more times after that as well.
And practically, how does that affect consumers?
Higher interest rates are a break on economic activity, but at this point they are still so low that I don't think it'll have a very significant impact on consumer spending on things like durable goods or even housing for that matter. As long as household incomes are rising, then that'll buffer some of the depressant from higher interest rates.
I'm going to have you look at your crystal ball a bit, if you wouldn't mind, and just kind of give us an idea of where you think we're going to go from here in terms of employment and wages and productivity and that sort of thing.
Absolutely. So I think that the job gains we're seeing could, in fact, accelerate somewhat over the course of this year. So even better than the 200,000 print we saw today. And that's happening as the economy upshifts from really below 2% growth at the end of 2016 to about 2.5% at the end of 2017 and maybe even further still in 2018. That faster growth will mean more job creation, a bit more wage pressures, and businesses will then boost their productivity to deal with that because they can't succumb to labor costs. So things are moving in a generally positive direction, and the Fed is going to be supportive of that move. Just because tightening rates a couple of times doesn't mean they're completely removing the punch bowl from the party, so to speak. And I think 2018 has a pretty constructive outlook.
Carl Riccadonna, the chief U.S. economist for Bloomberg in New York. As always, a pleasure to have you on the WBBM Noon Business Hour. Up next, we track the ups and downs of leading stocks in the tech sector.
Loaning useful information each weekday. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Results are in for key players in the tech sector, and let's take a closer look with Gary Kaltbaum, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management and Fox News business contributor out of Orlando. So, Gary, let's start with Amazon. Quite a nice day, almost like a prime stop purchase for them today.
Well, keep in mind, the stock was down $60 yesterday, and it's up $70 today. So between the 2 days, it's up $10. But the stock just broke out at the beginning of January at $1,200. It's $1,460, so things are going right. And look, when you're this big of a company and you're still growing earnings at 40% and revenues at 38%, you're going to be rewarded. It's having a good day off of that.
All right, let's segue over to Apple right now and talk about that investors don't seem to be totally thrilled with the idea that Apple has just more cash on hand. What's going on there?
First off, the stock was up 6 in the aftermarket yesterday. It's now down 6 today, so confusion reigns. The bigger issue is that their money that they made, a lot of it was because of higher prices on the iPhone 10, and I think the worry is how many people are going to pay upwards of $1,000 to $1,500 going forward for a phone, and that's why the talk is they may go towards something else going forward, and they've already they're going to cut production in half. So I think we're in this mode right now of uncertainty for Apple. I don't own any, and I'm not going to tell anybody to sell, but definitely it's on the weaker side right now.
And let's go with Google and Alphabet. Your thoughts there?
Numbers look pretty good. They just less than expected, and that's a no-no on Wall Street, and the stock's already had a good run. So it's getting hit today. But again, earnings were up 28, revenues up 24, just more than likely stock got ahead of itself. And again, when you tell Wall Street a certain number and you miss it, you pay a penalty. And plus, it doesn't help that the market's down 400 points today.
Is it too late to buy Amazon?
I wouldn't. And I'm not saying it's not going higher. I'm just saying it's had a 250-point move this month. And typically, normally, you're going to get some sort of pullback corrective work into it. Obviously, it hasn't happened as of yet. From my preference would be wait for pullbacks. Whether you get them or not, I don't know.
Do you anticipate a correction, and how big might that be?
In Amazon?
Amazon and the market as a whole.
Well, I think the market's going down another 1,000 points easy. We topped out in the last week or so, and I think there's a real big one-sided trade. So I suspect we'll be in the 24,000s here in the month or two ahead, which, by the way, is no big deal. After 8,400 points since the election, to come down, 1,500 is should be normal as normal can be. And as far as Amazon, I think it's probably going to pull back some. I just wouldn't buy it here. I think there'll be a better price going forward.
But with the overall correction, I mean, that sets the stage for another boost on Wall Street.
The issue is that we haven't had a correction. You're supposed to have corrections. This is actually a good thing. It gets the bearish people all happy. It wipes the smiles off the bull's face. It gets rid of the speculation and gets rid of the froth and sets the stage for higher prices when the correction is over. Our job now is just to watch and see where it decides to head to, and hopefully figure out when it decides to turn back up again.
Thanks for joining us today, Gary. Gary Kaltbaum is president of Kaltbaum Capital Management and Fox News business contributor in Orlando. Still ahead on this Entrepreneur Friday, Northwestern University takes a fresh approach to foster entrepreneurship.
WBBM News Time, 12:25. Let's see how the markets are doing as we go live to Bloomberg and Elisa Parenti. This report is sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks.
Jim, we are seeing our lowest levels now of the day. The Dow is sinking 428 points, a loss of 1.75%. And the benchmark's at 25,758. NASDAQ down 1.25% or 92. And the S&P sinking 38 points. That's a loss of 1.33%. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg is lower by 1.33%. The economy is not the problem. Hiring picked up in January. The Labor Department says employers added 200,000 jobs. The unemployment rate held at 4.1%, matching a 17-year low. Average hourly earnings were up the most since 2009. That is a concern for investors who worry that interest rates might follow as inflation heats up. And they're also concerned about profit reports from Apple, Google, Exxon, and Chevron. They are among the biggest losers. Now let's take a look at the grains markets. For that, we turn to Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal. Pete?
We have mixed prices here. Corn has been down 2.5 to up 0.5 at the moment. December corn is down 0.5 at 392.75. Beans have been down 8 to up 1. Beans right now for November, 9.99 at down 5.5. And July wheat's down 3, 4.75, 3 off their low. Lower prices at the moment. And this is Pete Manhart at Bates Commodities in Normal.
Thank you, Pete. With business at 25 and 55, live from the Bloomberg Newsroom, I'm Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
WBBM News Time, 12:30. Welcome to the second half of the WBBM Noon Business Hour, presented by Old Second Bank. I'm Jim Gutis.
I'm Chris Kreidel. We've got 14 degrees right now. The wind chill index is -3, and we'll have the forecast coming up.
A sell-off on Wall Street today, and we'll look into the what's moving the markets.
Entrepreneur Friday, taking a collaborative approach to the study of science and engineering and applying it to the real world.
The conventional thinking of waiting as long as possible to take Social Security could be changing.
Increasing traffic congestion here in Chicago may be linked to the rise of rideshare services.
And the GOP-led House Intelligence Committee releases a memo based on classified information tied to its investigation of the Russian election interference. A special report next from CBS News, WBBM News Time, 12:31.
CBS News special report, the GOP memo alleging FBI abuse of surveillance in the Russia probe has been released. President Trump okayed that release today.
I think it's a disgrace. What's going on in this country, I think it's a disgrace.
Constitutional law expert Jonathan Turley is with George Washington University.
Objectively, there's a great deal in this memo that raises serious concerns. Now, it is certainly true that this memo is written by the Republican majority, but the memo does quote witnesses in saying some alarming things.
On Capitol Hill, CBS's Nancy Cordes.
We are hearing from Democrats like Bob Casey of Pennsylvania, a senator who says House Republicans have conducted a coordinated smear campaign against law enforcement. And we've also heard from John McCain, Republican, who released a statement saying that our nation's elected officials have to stop looking at this investigation through the warped lens of politics and manufacturing partisan sideshows. Otherwise, we're doing Putin's job for him.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Dave Barrett.
And stay with News Radio WBBM for the latest on this developing story throughout the afternoon. WBBM News Time, 12:32.
Well, the markets are slumping on this final day of the trading week. We're joined by Brian Battle, Director of Trading at Performance Trust Capital Partners here in Chicago. A $400 point collapse on Wall Street today on the Dow Industrials. Brian, what's going on?
Dow and about almost 3% down on the S&P 500, which is the first 3% pullback in almost 2 years. So some of this sell-off is maybe overdue. You know, we've gone 404 days without a 3% sell-off in the S&P. That's the longest stretch since 1928. So some of this is healthy, you know, and remember too, it's 400 points out of a 25,000 point market. So I think the most reasonable, the things that are causing it are, A, it might be a little bit overdue, but really the economic data was okay, and that makes something that we've talked about on the show before is what is the threat to the stock market, and that's higher interest rates. And interest rates are rising in the U.S. Certainly Treasury yields are higher, and we're getting to a place where everybody is starting to recognize that the Federal Reserve is going to keep raising rates to make sure the economy doesn't overheat.
Well, we've been scratching our heads and wondering how long it would take for the Fed to make a move, and people weren't happy about that. And now we're sending stocks down because it appears they're going to.
Right. So the Federal Reserve sets short-term interest rates, and we have a new Fed chairman. So Jerome Powell is a new Federal Reserve chairman. There's expectations this year the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates 3 times in the short end. So right now they're about somewhere between 1.25% and 1.5%, so that's really, really low. But we're going to get to a more normalized level, and so all interest rates are rising in the expectation that the Federal Reserve is going to do whatever it takes to make sure that inflation doesn't creep back into the U.S. economy, and that's their job, is to take the punch bowl away just as the party gets started.
For those investors who home investors who want to take a look at what they can do next, what areas would you be watching?
So certainly, if you need you should refinance your mortgage for sure. If you haven't done that, you know, the 10-year treasury rate is at 2.75% or at 2.80% about right now. So that is probably implying a 4.25% or a 4.5% mortgage. So you should refi. Household investors shouldn't panic. Remember, you're a trader. You're an investor. Make sure you have an investment plan and you're sticking to it to make sure that you're balanced between stocks, bonds, foreign and domestic.
So what do you think about these job numbers? I mean, it's almost a 1-2 punch of good news, as we've been saying, because you've not only got better than expected, at least for many of the analysts, in terms of job growth, but you've also got wage growth that seems to be so strong. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on those two things? And in the long term, is this really going to result in a more solid, stable market?
Yeah, that's just right, Jim. The economic numbers today were all pretty positive. The number that was better than expected was average hourly earnings. So year over year, actual number was earnings up about 2.9%. So that's the thing the Federal Reserve has been looking for. They've given up on the unemployment rate. We have an unbelievably low unemployment rate of 4.1%. So that means 97.9% of the people looking for a job have found one. Or 96.9. So everybody's employed just looking for a job. So it is going to mean possibly higher wages, and that's the pressure the Fed's trying to trying to extinguish. The great news is for the economy is that it seems like things are getting better. Things are getting better overseas, and we have fiscal policy coming out of Washington, D.C., not just monetary policy, where they're lowering taxes, maybe making regulation easier so the economy can succeed. That's good news for the economy. That's good news for workers. And it's bad news for investors in as much as that the prices that stock investors thought they were going to get is going to be cut back a little bit because that might cause inflation. So it's good news and bad news depending on who you are.
And quickly, but just a footnote, Bitcoin drops below $8,000 for the first time since November.
Yeah, and the risk to Bitcoin has always been a success. The more people liked it, the more acceptance it got, the more attention it would get from regulatory authorities. And so around the world, South Korea, China, and the U.S. are starting to say, hey, wait a second, we can't keep track of this stuff. Maybe it'll be used for bad purposes. And it's not just Bitcoin, too. You know, Bitcoin's down 21% on the week, but Ripple, Ethernet, and Litecoin are also down about 28%. So cryptocurrencies are really getting handed back to them after Bitcoin hitting a record of 19,000 on December 18th, less than a month ago, or a little bit more than a month ago. So it's something to watch, but the regulatory threat coins are really the biggest threat, not that they're useful or helpful.
Ryan Battle, the director of trading at Performance Trust Capital Partners in Chicago, thank you as always. Up next on Entrepreneur Friday, an educated approach to helping fuel business innovation.
A wallet full of information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It is Entrepreneur Friday on the Noon Business Hour. This afternoon, we're looking at a collaborative approach that links higher education with the business world. And we welcome Michael Marasco, clinical professor and director at Northwestern University's Farley Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation here in Evanston. Mike, welcome to the Noon Business Hour.
Good afternoon.
We're interested in what your structure is. How do you get this collaborative approach?
Well, at Northwestern, it really happens through a collaboration of a bunch of different parts of the university. So I'm on the teaching side. The Farley Center, we started 10 years ago with a focus around interdisciplinary education. So we bring together students from all over the university, graduate students, like, say, a chemistry PhD with a Kellogg student and with maybe one of our undergraduate students who's focused on design or chemical engineering, and we bring them together in classes where the focus is how do you build a startup in a very specific sector. So when we do that, facilitated by myself, but also facilitated by some of our PhD faculty researchers, our tenured faculty, who are also serial entrepreneurs. So we have faculty here at Northwestern who sold companies to Apple, Allergan, the major drug manufacturer, and things like that. And those faculty actually take time out of their busy days and actually helped us teach classes about how do you launch a new pharmaceutical company? How do you launch a company in nanotechnology? And we're just launching a new one in an area called biomaterials, which are flat sensors. We have a faculty member here, the name of John Rogers, who is an expert in the space. And one of his products was one of the top 10 products that was just launched at the Consumer Electronics Show last month in Las Vegas.
Tell us about the whole brain engineering philosophy.
So we're trying to help our students get the detailed knowledge they need to know to be a chemical engineer or a mechanical engineer, but we're also trying to tap into the other side of their brain, which is more focused around which is not as what I would say is concrete, that allows them to deal with the uncertainties associated with a startup and the ability to come up with something without all the correct information. So we really believe it's important to help to build students that have in-depth knowledge of the subject areas they're majoring in, but also complement that with, if they're interested in music, they can do a dual degree in music. If they're interested in entrepreneurship, they can minor in entrepreneurship. If they're interested in design, they can do that as well. We think it's important, and Northwestern tends to attract students who are, who've been lifelong pianists, but also have an interest in computer science, as an example. So we have programs that bring together music and computer science specifically for that reason. So that creates students that really are thinking about things differently, and therefore they're also willing to take risks associated with doing a startup. And in today's world where technology is so prevalent, it's so easy to do a startup. The students of today are dramatically smarter than than I was when I was their age, because they have so much more technology to tap into.
Is it sort of like a typical incubator might say, okay, here are your seeds, there's the dirt, good luck. This is like, here are your seeds, there's the dirt. Oh, by the way, here's the water, here's the sun, here's the fertilizer. Everything coming together to make this work. Is that what makes this different than, say, other incubators?
We bring together, we connect students via, we connect students with faculty doing research that's relevant in the real world. And those faculty are looking for students to commercialize them. So that's one thing we bring. We connect them to our alums that are in the space who want to help them. Sometimes it's just mentoring, but other times it's also serving as an investor or an advisor. So, a university is a hub of a lot of different things. Part of what we believe our center's responsibility is to connect our students to that hub. We have an incubator on campus and we want them to leverage that, but we also want, everyone thinks you go to school to get an education, and that's very important, but you also go to school to get a network. That network partly is the people you went to school with, but it's also the other alums of that university. Because if you're going to call someone out of the cold, and that person also happens to have gone to Northwestern, that person's going to pick up the phone much faster than if you didn't have any connection to him or her.
Michael Marasco, the clinical professor and director of Northwestern University's Farley Center for Entrepreneurship and Innovation in Evanston. Thank you so much for joining us. Still to come, determining the right time to start collecting Social Security.
Discussing your dollars, the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The prevailing advice from some on Social Security seems to be wait as long as you can to start collecting benefits. But let's get the perspective of Mark Hulbert, who's the investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, USA Today, and MarketWatch.com out of Washington, D.C. So, Mark, what is your thought on when you should start collecting Social Security?
Well, it turns out that it depends on any of a number of assumptions. And I know that's not a very satisfactory answer to be told, well, it depends. But it really is the case that it depends. And the reason that's noteworthy is that almost all financial planners, as indeed you hinted in your intro here, are suggesting that people always wait to age 70 in order to start taking their Social Security benefits. And yes, there are a number of assumptions about our livelihood and our other income and so forth, under which that is a very good decision, but it's not always the case. So what are the things you should take into account? So, for example, if you have other investments that you could put the money into, so let's say you start taking your Social Security at age 66, even if you don't need the money, and you invest that money yourself, it turns out that you might be able to earn more than the increase that you would otherwise get by waiting to age 70. So it really depends on that. One other assumption is how confident you are that the federal government is going to be able to meet all its Social Security obligations. In fact, if every one of us probably has already received or will in coming weeks receive our annual Social Security statement from the Social Security Administration, and right there in black and white on page one, it says that that these are not guaranteed, and that if there is no change by the year 2034, we're only going to be able to pay 77 cents on the dollar of what otherwise is in the law for what you would be getting from Social Security. And so it's right there, and that's a rather alarming prospect. And given the dysfunction in Washington, it's hard to see how we're going to figure out how we're going to make the system solvent again.
Well, that would be kind of frightening if our only option is Social Security, and they mix it up in Washington.
Well, that's right. And that, indeed, in my column on the subject, I quote one of the advisors I track who says he was turning 66 this year, by the way, and he said when he starts looking at it all, he decided, better let's take the money and run. You're getting 100 cents on the dollar now. At age 66, he's going to go ahead and take it. He doesn't need the money right now. He's going to go ahead and invest it, and at least he'll have that without having to depend on the federal government to make good on his promises.
Mark Hulbert, the investment columnist for The Wall Street Journal, Barron's, USA Today, and MarketWatch.com out of Washington. It's always a pleasure to have you with us. And you'll find past programs and later today a podcast of this hour at WBBMNewsRadio.com and the all-new Radio.com app. We'll check the markets in a minute.
WBBM News Time 12:55. Markets sponsored by Wintrust Community Banks. Here's Elisa Peretti.
Chris, no let up in the losses. In fact, they seem to be accelerating. The Dow is now lower by 432 points, a loss of 1 2/3%. The benchmark's at 25,755. The NASDAQ tumbling 83 points, S&P down 38. Those are also losses of more than 1%. The Wintrust WBBM Chicago Index from Bloomberg lower by almost 1.5%. Google's parent Alphabet touted the promise of its YouTube viewership and booming advertising. It had to. The expense of running its web search ad business is eating into profit, and stock in Alphabet is sinking more than 4%. The largest U.S. oil companies have missed out on a rebound in U.S. oil production. Most of the oil Exxon and Chevron produce is from overseas. They both missed profit and production estimates in the latest quarter. Those Dow stocks also deep in the red. Mattel somehow lost money during the biggest quarter of the year for the toy industry, the holidays. But analysts think the worst is over. Mattel is headed higher. With business at 25 and 55, live from Bloomberg, Elisa Parenti, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM.
WBBM and HD Chicago, WCFS FM and HD1 Elmwood Park, Chicago.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.